Good evening. Tonight we're going to do a study of Psalm 61, and we're going to title this lesson, The Rock That Is Higher Than I. You know, rocks are seldom the objects of very spirited conversation. After all, when was the last time you discussed feldspar or shale or dolomite around the dinner table? Probably it's been a long time, if ever. Rocks are important, and they're metaphorically irreplaceable. For example, you might remember that the Prudential Insurance Company at one time used the Rock of Gibraltar as its logo to indicate that it was solid and secure. Chevrolet had a slogan at one time, like a rock. Weightlifters claim that their muscles are hard as a rock, and people are often said to be diamonds in the rough. And we could go on and on, but we see how that rocks are used for metaphorical applications very frequently. But you know, the Bible uses the stability and durability and dependability of rocks in both literal and metaphorical ways. In Psalm 61 and verse 2, he said, "From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I." You remember when Peter had made the good confession in Matthew 16 and verse 18, Jesus said to him, "Thou art Peter, and upon this rock," that is the confession that he had made that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God, "that upon that rock he would build his church," the fact that he was the Christ. In Matthew 7 and verse 24, we read Jesus saying, "Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man who built his house upon a rock." Anything less is weak and unstable. For example, the house that is built upon sand. Those who are able to stand in spite of every storm are those who not only build upon, but invest their trust in the Rock of Ages. So we want to look tonight at Psalm 61 and the statement made in verse 2, but notice why David said what he did and where he drew comfort from the knowledge that his trust was well placed in God. So first of all, in verse 1, let's notice the perception and prayer. "Hear my cry, O God, attend unto my prayer." David realized the presence and the providence of God, which could be utilized through prayer. He knew that prayer was accompanied by faith. James said, "The prayer of faith shall save the sick," James 5 and verse 15. And David knew how important prayer was. This psalm was written during one of his periods of exile. It's thought to be during Absalom's rebellion, about which we read in 2 Samuel 17, and especially verse 22, and written while David's life was still in danger. What he knew and wherein he placed his confidence was the fact that God had helped before, that God would help again, and that only through God's help would his life be spared. And you might want to look at 1 Samuel 24 and Psalm 142 in that context. This psalm or this statement is similar to Psalm 18, which occurs in 2 Samuel 22 as well. That is, the historical background of it does. This would appear after a series of victories, yet during a time of turmoil and great distress. So then look at verse 2 and look at, first of all, persistence. He said, "From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee." He would never hesitate to ask when help was needed. David was now far away from his home and the place that he longed to be. However, he knew that the Lord could hear his desperate cries from anywhere. "Lead me to some stronghold where I will be safe," the second part of that verse says. When his heart was overwhelmed, he would cry unto the Lord, but he said, "Lead me to the rock that is higher than I." He knew that he did not have sufficient strength within himself, and that if he depended upon himself, he would not be safe. He felt as though he was in a valley, fully exposed to every enemy, and his desire was for the Lord to lead him to a stronghold, a place of safety. We need one much higher than ourselves to help us as well. We're in desperate need of a Redeemer, and without him we have no hope, only fear and dread. There is no place on earth where God could not hear. Read Psalm 139, verses 1 through 12, and listen to how the psalmist speaks of God's omniscience and his ability to know where he was and that he could not hide from God, which is both a terrifying thought in a way, but it's a comforting thought to the Christian, to the person who needs God's help. In James 4 and verse 2, James says, you have not because you ask not. So David's prayer was a persistent prayer as he continued to pray to God. Notice number three, the power involved. Beginning at verse 2 and going on through verse 4, he said, lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for thou hast been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings, Selah. To the rock that is higher than I, he said, indicating a superior strength and a superior position. The fact that God had protected him before proved two things, that God has the power to deliver, and that God, who had intervened in the past, might very well do so again. That is a powerful motivation for prayer. David counted it a privilege to dwell close to the tabernacle wherein was God's presence, and he longed to return. Even greater was the hope of dwelling with him in his eternal throne in heaven. His protection, therefore, would be in God. Look at verse 5 and notice point number 4, that is performance. David's troubled mind became calm when he remembered the faithfulness and the strength of the Lord. Let's read verse 5 now. For thou, O God, hast heard my vows. Thou hast given me the heritage of those that fear thy name. In the pulpit commentary, this statement is made about verse 5. He said, our past is not lost. It is gone, but it has left its lessons and its memories. Looking back, we can see the hand of God. Our memories may be turned to hopes. Our remembrance of God's gracious dealings may be converted into inspiration and guidance for the future. It is true that as we look back over our lives, we can see a lot of troubled times perhaps, but we also can see God's providential care even in those times. And David saw that. God had given David the benefits that come to his people, namely that of hearing their prayers. Well, look at man's part. What had David promised to the Lord? What have we promised to the Lord? And then there's God's part. David said, thou hast given, and that's in the past tense. What had he done? Well, David recounted on one occasion how that God had allowed him to kill a lion and a bear with his bare hands. What about Goliath? What about in the cave of Adullam? David had been saved in response to his vows. And we in the Christian age receive the same when we vow to trust and obey the Lord in all things without question. Being part of God's heritage did not mean freedom from pain or persecution by being part of that alone, but it was a reason to be strong in their presence and the hope of the peace that was to come. Then if you look at verses 6 and 7, we'll find point number 5, and that is preservation. Thou wilt prolong the king's life and his years as many generations. He shall abide before God forever. O prepare mercy and truth, which may preserve him. So David thought and understood and knew that he would be preserved through mercy. Mercy is only extended to those who are in need or in distress by those in a position to help. When someone is being sentenced before a judge, the accused might shout out, Your Honor, have mercy on me. How many times did people come to Jesus begging, Lord, have mercy on me? Why? Because he was in a position to help. David knew that God was in a position to help, and that because of God's mercy, he would. That he would be preserved not only through mercy, but also through truth. No job can be done correctly without accurate information. A house is not truly square if one carpenter uses a yardstick, which is 37 inches, while all the others use the standard of 36. One that uses a yardstick at 37 and one at 36 will introduce errors throughout the building of that house. We read about a young prophet who believed a lie and was killed on the way home. Jeremiah said in Jeremiah 5 and verse 30 that prophets prophesy falsely and the priests bear rule by their means. And my people love to have it so, but what will you do in the end thereof? Remember when Jesus prayed in John 17 and verse 17, he said, sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. In John 8 and verse 32, he said, it is the truth that will make us free. So David knew that he would be preserved through God's mercy, but also through truth. Days unto days wilt thou add to the king, verse 6. He would abide with God forever, verse 7. His restoration to his earthly throne was emblematic of his future presence with God before his eternal throne. On earth, he would have no fear of being banished again, and in eternity, he would have no fear of being separated from God. God's mercy and truth would secure his permanent place on his earthly throne, and his ultimate reception in heaven was also secure. Then look at point number 6, which is praise. So will I sing praise unto thy name forever, that I may daily perform my vows. Well, this is a fitting response for him who could grant the victory, that is, for God. Vows or promises cannot be kept if they're forgotten. Just give me that chance and I'll keep my promises. You know, the nation's divorce rate would plummet to zero if everyone kept their promises. Collection agencies would be out of business if people kept their promises. God's houses around the world would be filled to capacity if people kept their promises. David said, Lord, help me out of this situation. Give me the strength to overcome my enemies. I will praise you for it, and don't worry, I won't forget to keep my promises either. When mercy and truth are present, God should be given the glory. David said, I will not forget the blessings received in exile, and I will never cease to show appreciation. Again, this is verse 8. So the whole psalm is a declaration of David's desire to be close to God and to be able to worship him. We may face many challenges, not just physical ones, but sometimes spiritual and emotional. We may feel torn apart by loss, discouraged by loneliness, or burdened with guilt. But David showed us where to turn in times of distress such as these, and that is to the rock of our salvation. Why? Because of what he has done and can do through the immutable power of his word. Psalm 12 and verse 2 says this, My help cometh from the Lord which made heaven and earth. Psalm 124 and verse 8 says this, Our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth. And then notice Matthew 24 and verse 35. And note the awesome power of the Bible in comparison. Jesus said, Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. Do you think it's an accident or a coincidence that we still have copies of the scripture today? Jesus said his word will not pass away. It will not disappear from our presence, but also it will be that which will judge us, and therefore we must have access to it. John 12, verse 48. So we look at God's mercy and truth. His mercy and truth is present this evening. It's revealed in his word. It's confirmed in his presence. So here's the question. Have we honored our vows to God? Have you promised to obey him someday? Well, why not today? Have you promised to return when things get better? Well, why not tonight? God is the ultimate source of stability, durability, and dependability. Why not place your trust in his truth and mercy? Praise him for his salvation and keep your vows that you may ever stand in his presence. If we could help, would you come as together we stand and as we sing?